Good evening. Yes, it's me again. You know, usually when I'm asked to prepare a lesson, in this case, Nathan just said do a lesson, I have a sort of a policy I have, and that is I will write a lesson that I need to hear. And I do that for the simple reason is that if I do that, I'm guaranteed that at least one person gets something out of it. But also, seriously, I feel that if I write a lesson for myself, most of us all are in the same situation, so if it's something that I need to deal with, then hopefully you'll get something out of it also. So I'll ask you if you will please turn to the second Psalms. And as you do that, I have a question I would like to ask you. In fact, a question I'd like you to consider. But before I ask you the question, I want to take a little time for us to and give you a little food for thought for you to consider before you think about answering the question. So in Psalms 2, starting in verse 1, it states, "Why do the nations rage and the people plot in vain things? The kings of the earth set themselves and rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us." The psalmist asks the question, why do people try to set themselves against the will of God? In reading the verses, the psalmist seems to point out that not only do people try to go against God, it seems that they're actually angry at God. But why? How is it possible someone can be angry at God? In fact, we look at 1 John 4:16. It tells us, "And we have known and believed the love that God has for us. God is love, and he who abides in love abides in God, and God in him." So if God is love, how can someone actually be angry at God? If you think about this a little further, in fact, when you consider the first murder, it was not because two people had an argument. It's not because two people had a disagreement. But rather, it's because one person was angry at God and simply took it out on the other person. Genesis chapter 4, let's turn there. It's a story we know. But let's look at it and just read it again. Genesis 4, starting in verse 3. "In the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. And Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flocks and their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offerings, but he did not respect Cain and his offerings. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? And why is your countenance fallen?" Let's stop there for a moment. When we look at that, Cain is angry, but he's not really angry at Abel, because Abel hasn't done anything to offend Cain. Rather, Cain is angry at God. "If you do well, you will not be accepted. If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Now Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and killed him." So here we see the first murder was not over an issue of Cain being angry at Abel. Rather, it was simply Cain was angry at God. So to try to further address the question of why a person would be angry at God, and to help us prepare us for the question I'm about to ask you, I want you just to look at three people from the last two centuries. And these are men of science. The first person is Bertrand Russell. It's maybe a name you're not familiar with. Bertrand Russell was one of the brightest mathematicians of the last century. He co-authored a landmark book in mathematics and logic entitled Principia Mathematica. It's not on the bestseller list, so don't go look for it. But it literally was the pioneering work in logic. In fact, it is the cornerstone for the science which we now call analytics. So whenever you see now the big cell of computers that do analytics, it's based on the work of Bertrand Russell. He's one of the giants in the field of information sciences. Bertrand Russell in his lifetime also wrote a short essay entitled, "Why I Am Not a Christian." In this paper, he explained why he saw little, if any, value in living the life following the teachings of Jesus Christ. In fact, he claims Christianity was simply foolish. Sad to say, that essay that Bertrand Russell wrote, entitled, Why I Am Not a Christian, has done more damage to people's lives than all the good that has come from Russell's writings in mathematics. So we're left with a question. Why would a man as intelligent as Russell, and Russell was a brilliant man, and trained in the rigors of logic, why would he write a paper against God that is neither rigorous nor logical? Now I want us to consider two men from the middle of the 1800s. One name you may be very familiar with, one you may not be as familiar. They are Charles Darwin and Thomas Huxley, both well-educated, and both men most famous for their stand on evolution. Of course, we know Charles Darwin for writing the book Origin of Species. Thomas Huxley actually went around with the title Darwin's Bulldog because of the position he took publicly in defending evolution against Christian teachings. Yet both men demonstrated, the interesting thing about here are scientific men who took a stand on evolution, yet both men knew, and they even demonstrated in their writings, there was no scientific evidence for evolution. I want to use a term here, because you asked me, well, how can I make that plain? I need to use a word or a term you're not familiar with, and it's called a Bernoulli trial. You can impress your friends with that term. A Bernoulli trial is actually a very simple experiment. What makes it unique is, when you do a Bernoulli trial, there are only two outcomes. It's either a successful test or it's a failure. Simple as that. So why do I bring that up? So you have to ask the question, since evolution's been out there, and here are men of science such as Darwin and Thomas Huxley. So has there ever been a Bernoulli trial that's been proposed to see if evolution is a viable theory? In other words, is there a test to test evolution? And what's interesting is, Charles Darwin himself actually proposed two Bernoulli trials in his book, Origin of Species. The first trial proposed by Darwin was the existence of transitional species in the fossil records. What Charles Darwin said is, we believe in these transitions. Surely there are the fossils that show transitions. And the second one is, again, very simple, and again, to prove or disprove evolution, can you get life from non-life? That is, can you make proteins, and from proteins, build life? Simple trials, simple experiments. If you do the experiments, either you find the fossil records or you find life. And in the past 150 years, running both these Bernoulli trials, the outcome has been, wait for it, false. No transitional species have been found in 150 years of searching. So wait, Charles Darwin said, here's the test. We failed the test. Also, we're supposed to be able to, according to evolution, make life from non-life. You talk to anyone who's taken biology, the first thing they're taught is called biogenesis. Biogenesis says, simply, you only get life from life. In the past 150 years, guess what? You still only get life from life. Two trials, both of which evolution has failed. Yet both these men in their entire life, Charles Darwin, Thomas Huxley, men of science, well-educated men, argued and fought to prove that evolution existed and that Christianity was itself a lie. So you have to ask the question, here are two men who are trained in science, not advancing science, but trying to prove that God does not exist. That was the bottom line. So what's my point? Why do we talk about these three men? The question we have to ask is, why did these three men, trained in science, spend their lives and energy simply trying to deny the existence of God? I will argue in the case of Bertrand Russell, it was because he felt God was too restrictive. You see, Bertrand Russell was sexually promiscuous. And he was angry with God and with the Christian teachings that God would interfere and try to dictate his behavior. It's as simple as that. What about Charles Darwin and Thomas Huxley? I'll make a comment saying, and I believe I can defend this, both men early in their professional careers lost a young child that they deeply, deeply loved. For Daran, it was his daughter Anne, who died at the age of 10. It's interesting that it was 10 years after Anne's death that Charles Darwin published his book. And what's interesting about his book, we always use the term Origin of Species. You need to understand that book is not about plants and animals. It's about people. I'll be blunt. Charles Darwin was a racist. In fact, let me allow me to give you the full title of the book. It's called Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selections, or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. Charles Darwin was trying to prove that man was simply an animal, and there was no God and no God-likeness in man. So, for Huxley, what turned Huxley against God was the death of his young son, Noel. In fact, in a letter written shortly after his son's death, in fact, a letter written to a woman that was trying to give him comfort in Christianity, his response was that he had now established himself, dedicated himself, if you will, to his mission of promoting evolution and condemning the principles of Christianity. It was from their losses for both these men, in effect, they abandoned their scientific training and fostered an unrelenting anger at God. Consider for a moment the consequences of these men's misguided feelings. How many people have the writings of these men harmed spiritually? How many more people have had their faith destroyed by others who have followed these men and their false teaching of evolution? So we can see here how the consequence of a person's anger against God has impacted the lives of countless others. In fact, consider from the Bible multiple accounts of such things. I think of King Ahaz. It's interesting because God granted Ahaz, gave him the chance, if you will, to trust God. In fact, God even asked Ahaz to test him so that Ahaz could trust him. But King Ahaz was angry at God. In Isaiah chapter 7, starting in verse 10, "Moreover, the Lord spoke again to Ahaz, saying, 'Ask a sign for yourself from the Lord your God. Ask it either in the depths or in the height above.'" So stop for a moment. God is asking Ahaz, "Trust me." He tells Ahaz, "Ask me to do anything so I can prove to you that I'm here for you." Ahaz's response, "But Ahaz said, 'I will not ask, nor will I test the Lord.' Then he said," this is the Lord said, "'Hear now, O house of David, it's a small thing for you to weary men, but will you weary my God also?'" When we read scriptures like this, it almost seems comical that men would try to be foolish and be angry at God and try to act out their anger against God. But the sad truth is, we've seen it all the time, don't we? People will not only destroy themselves, but even those around them because they are simply angry at God. In fact, if we think about it, let's consider the case of Charles Darwin and Thomas Huxley. The fact that they were angry at God for the untimely death of their young children. Think about it. If we were there and we lived at that time, how would we have responded to these men? You know, we need to consider and answer that question. For you see, they were struggling with the issue of, do bad things happen to innocent people? Because their view were, here are these two innocent children that died early, and obviously God is unjust because they hadn't done anything wrong. And so we need to address that question, do bad things happen to innocent people? And we need to be careful and not deny that fact, because that is a fact. For we see from their writings, it was obvious that these men did not understand that simple fact. In fact, it's interesting in the Gospel of John, we have an account where Jesus himself needed to correct his own disciples because they did not understand the simple fact that, yes, bad things, what we consider bad things, happen to innocent people. John chapter 9, starting in verse 1. "Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, 'Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind. Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents, but that the works of God should be revealed in him." Look at verse 3 again. Notice, Jesus points out blindness has nothing to do with sins. In fact, sometimes we have a problem with what's a bad thing. Also, there was his parents nor this man had sinned, or at least the blindness was not related to sin. Also, Jesus did not say that God caused the man to be blind. Rather, Jesus points out that God can and will use a situation for good. Sometimes I wonder if Charles Darwin or Thomas Huxley understood or knew these verses and understood that the death of their children could have helped them rather than drive them to the point where literally they attacked God and attacked souls. Consider for a moment, again, people being angry at God and the flood account in Genesis. I've had people ask me in anger, how could God kill all those innocent children? And I'll tell you that, yes, I agree. There were innocent babies who perished in the flood in Genesis. And yes, there are many children who are simply too young to have known sin. So why did God kill them? Consider the world that those children had been born in. A world not created by God, but rather a world formed from the free choices made by men. In fact, we understand in Genesis 6 what was happening to that world. Genesis 6, 5 says, "Then the Lord saw the wickedness of men was great on the earth, and that every intent of their thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved his heart." So people ask me, but what about the children? They never had, and I'll use the term, a chance. After the flood, in the land of Cana, it was not uncommon for the people who lived in Cana, the Canaanites, that when they would build a house, they would take an innocent child, kill him, and place him in the cornerstone of the house. Also, the people of Cana also worshiped the god Moloch. This is the god of fire. His statue was hollow brass. And the reason it was hollow was because they would fill the statue with fire until it actually glowed hot. And then they would offer a sacrifice, their children. They would actually take this red hot statue and place the child into the statue's arms. To make it easy for them, they actually would play a flute so that you couldn't hear the screams of the children. I tell you this because that's the world after the flood. Can you imagine how much more evil there was before the flood? A world that was so corrupt, God had to destroy it. And as for these poor children who died in the flood, think about it. Rather than allowing these children to be destroyed by evil, God simply took them back. Rather than have them burned to death in the arms of a statue, God allowed the children to come into his arms, the God that would love them throughout eternity. But people that, again, in anger will say, but they never had a life. You have to ask the question, what kind of life would they have had in a world where every thought of man was evil? Again, sometimes when people are angry at God, their anger has no logic. Just like we look at Darwin and Huxley. They put logic out the window just to drive their hate, just to drive their anger. So now that we've considered a few things, allow me to ask my question. And I'll tell you that this question is a question I have to ask myself all the time, because it's a difficult question. I have to ask myself, and I ask you, am I angry at God? And I'll ask you to ask yourself, are you angry at God? Because I know in all of us, in all our lives, there are times that things happen that we do not understand. And because we don't understand, it's very easy to react. Anger is simply a reaction. And so it's so easy to react, and we react at God. So what should we do? What can we do? For me, it helps me to think about Job. When Job was in the middle of his sufferings, remember, he had lost his health, he had lost his wealth, he had lost his children, and his own life and his own wife had said to him, "Curse God and die." Job's response in Job 2 is, "But he said to her, 'You speak as one of the foolish women speak. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity?' But in all this, Job did not sin with his lips." I want to make a little side note here. Sometimes I think we're a little hard on Job's wife. We forget that, remember, she had just lost 10 children also. And perhaps she's speaking just out of emotion. But when trials and difficulties come, how quickly do we forget the blessing God has showered on us? It's easy to become angry with God when we perceive difficulties. But hopefully, it's easier for us to rejoice when God blesses us. You know, it's interesting when you look at great disasters, how many people respond by being angry at God, blaming God. In fact, just recently, when you think about 9/11, how many people were saying, "Where's God?" Yet, do we stop and realize things do happen, and sometimes there's blessings we don't see or understand? Last year, 2014, marked the start of the 100th anniversary of World War I. Because of the impact it had on society, it was referred to as the war to end all wars. Sadly, it wasn't. July 1st, 2016, marked the 100th anniversary of the Battle of the Somme. On that day, July 1st, 1916, in the first 1 hour of the battle, 30,000 men died. In fact, when the battle was finally ended 3 months later, the death toll for that single battle was over 1 million dead in the war to end all wars. People ask why. They'll be angry at God. "God, why did you let that war happen? What was the value of the death of so many young men?" In fact, the term they used, did these men live for a single purpose, and that was to become, and the term that was used, cannon fodder. If you're not familiar with fodder, that's what you feed cattle. Simply was, did these people die just to be shot? Is that why they lived? So I'll tell you up front, I don't know God's plans. But I'll tell you something very interesting. Because of the death of these young men on the battlefield in World War I, people began to ask why. And as people asked why and looked for answers, some were willing to hear the message of truth found in scriptures. Do you know that the period following World War I was a time of one of the greatest growths in the history of the Lord's church? It's sad to say for some people, they become so filled with anger, they will never know joy. And what is most heartbreaking, it's because of their choices. Allow me this evening to end on a positive note. When we look at anger, we as children of God are fortunate that we have a God who is slow to anger. And perhaps that should be our lesson, is that when we become angry, maybe we need to step back and not be angry so quickly. Psalms 45, starting in verse 7. "They shall abundantly utter the memory of the great goodness and shall sing of the righteousness. The Lord is gracious, full of compassion, slow to anger, and of great mercy. The Lord is God, the Lord is good to all, and his tender mercies are over all his works. And all thy works shall praise thee, O Lord, and thy saints shall bless thee." Again, perhaps when we talk about being angry, perhaps the lesson is we need to be like God and not be angry so easily, but rather, like Job, realize that, yes, adversity comes, but so do blessings. If you're not a member of the Lord's body, you're not part of his family, there are no blessings promised to you. But how do you enter those promises? God has shown a way. And if you're learning, We'd like to continue to teach you. If you know what you need to do, we'd welcome you. Perhaps you become angry at God. Perhaps you knew his blessings, but because you've allowed anger to blind you, maybe it's time to open your eyes again. God, as it says, is slow to anger and quick to forgive. If we can help you in any way, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.